I'm Michael, and welcome to Beyond the Screenplay, the podcast where each week we do a conversational deep dive analysis into a film. Today we are talking about Thor Ragnarok, the 2017 film directed by Taika Waititi, written by Eric Pearson, Craig Kyle, and Christopher L. Yost. I'm joined by the Beyond the Screenplay team, Trisha Arand.
Hello, everyone.
Brian Bittner.
Hey, man.
And Alex Gallegos.
Hi.
Okay, so before we dive into this movie, I want to announce what our next episode is so everyone can prepare. I'm really excited because I'd forgotten, and then I was going through the list and I was like, okay, what's next? Oh, Get Out is next. One of the best movies ever. So yeah, Get Out will be our next episode. Visit it if you have not yet. And patrons, head over to the Patreon. There will be a link in the show notes. Head over where you can drop ideas. What you want us to talk about, concepts, things to pay attention to, themes, all that good stuff. We got a lot of cool feedback from patrons for this episode about things that they want us to talk about with Thor Ragnarok. JMW Music wants us to talk about like improv, our thoughts on how improv plays into scripts. Seth Brock, changing the tone with Thor. Is this too silly? Is it inconsistent? Is it good? Megan Chang, theme of colonialism and rewriting uglier parts of history, among many other suggestions are things that I think will be fun to pull from and frame this conversation. And I'm glad I got to shout out JMW Music because they are one of the people in the live chat right now because we are recording this episode live. Live over the internet, but streaming the recording of this episode.
Whenever
live.
You're listening to this, we are doing it live. It's a new technology. It's
a
crazy.
Quantum state. But yes, we are joined by a bunch of our lovely patrons who are watching us stream this live. So hopefully they enjoy themselves and have cool thoughts that we can bring into the conversation as well. And recording these episodes live is something we want to try to do like once a month or so. So if you want to come and join us and watch these live recordings, head over to the Beyond the Screenplay Patreon. The link is in the show notes. They are a lot of fun and you get to see all the technical problems like the ones we just had that just got cut that nobody else knows about.
What are you talking about?
What are we talking about?
We've been here the whole time.
Yeah. Okay. So Thor Ragnarok. So I think it's safe to say that I think this is people's, like many people's favorite Marvel film, or at least was a big turning point in, I think, a lot of people's relationships to Marvel. I think it did kind of reinvigorate the franchise, in my eyes anyway, and kind of, especially Thor. We could talk about the history of the Thor films. But yeah, I remember seeing the teasers for it being like, and then watching it and all of it clicking together and being like, this is so much fun. This is like some of the most fun I've had in a theater in a while. And really appreciating this new take on Thor, the humor, the leaning into the kind of silliness and levity, but without breaking, in my eyes anyway, the stakes that come around, like the character, you're still invested in all the characters, they're just having a bit more fun with it. So yeah, I really like this movie. I think there are some interesting structure things we can talk about, and the design of the antagonist and how often the antagonist and the protagonist interact, I think is one of the, basically I feel like the kind of underutilized Cape Blanchett, and I want to talk about that at some point. So I think there are bumps, there are things that I think could have been massaged to be a little bit more impactful, but overall, I really enjoy this film and think it's a really fun ride. So to hear from you guys, Brian, tell me about Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I love this movie. It's funny because it's a lot of people's favorite Marvel movie. It's also, I think, some people's least favorite Marvel movie. So it's this interesting thing where it did this like crazy thing, right? Which, you know, it was riding the tail of Guardians of the Galaxy, of course, but it was just sort of like, well, we don't know what to do with Thor. So like, let's give it to this guy and let's make it crazy. you know, I definitely want to hear from our listeners who are big comics fans and are like huge MCU fans to hear like how this felt at the time. Cause I know, you know, I'm sort of right smack dab in the middle in terms of MCU fandom, where it's like, I like it enough that I've seen every movie, some of them multiple times. I'm watching the shows now, but I also don't have like a deep Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, you know, like kind of connection with it where I'm like, oh, you better do this way or I'm going to be upset kind of thing. So like, I don't really care if an MCU movie just like does something totally bonkers, but that doesn't mean it's going to be for me. Like Multiverse of Madness was, you know, the second act of that movie, I kind of was really not excited about. And Ragnarok is like a little tiny bit too silly for me, but ultimately I love it. And I don't mind that it's not sort of what the MCU had kind of established itself to be up to that point. But it was a little bit of a shock to the system, you know, especially that first trailer. Like I kind of hate the friend from work line. And I was telling my friend about the trailer when it first came out, and he was like watching all the MCU. He was even watching like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at that point. And I told him that line, he went, oh my God, like just like, ugh. And then we watched the movie and he had a great time watching it. And he's like, but it's so different, you know, like it's that sort of, it's different and that's good and it's different, but that's bad. So we can get into all of that. But ultimately, because I personally don't need the MCU to be this incredibly tightly woven, everything is aesthetically the same kind of thing, I just love this movie as a standalone movie. Like it tells you in the first few minutes what it's going to be, and then it just stays that, you know. So in terms of that, like in terms of what it is as a standalone movie, I think it's just a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, cool. Okay, Trisha.
Yeah, this is my favorite Marvel movie. And it's really funny. It's great. I've seen it a bunch of times. I find it super rewatchable because it's just entertaining and like stylish, and it's really funny to me. Like I'm kind of on Taika's wavelength. I feel like I'm just a fan of his in general. And so like, I just love all the little moments in this where you can see his sense of humor coming through. Rachel House's character, you know, she's in a lot of stuff that Taika makes, but she's just awesome.
There's some great extended sequences with Jeff Goldblum and her just doing like a whole like improvised run.
Yeah, she's incredible. I there's so much of it that I love. Obviously, Korg is the best character in the MCU. distraught to learn that the whole next movie isn't just about Korg. Apparently, there's all these other people that are going to be in it too. But I just, yeah, I really enjoy this. Now, as like an MCU fan, do I think it like fits super well into the MCU? I don't know. Maybe not. Probably not. I think it is more on the wavelength of Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it takes a lot of cues from those movies in terms of its humor, in terms of its aesthetic, right? As well. And so I think the fact that the Guardians of the Galaxy movies had proved that could work really did this movie a lot of favors. I think at the time that I saw it first, I hadn't even really seen the Thor movies. I saw the first one on an airplane and I was like, wow, all right. And then I think I'd skipped The Dark World entirely, which is fine. It's extremely skippable. You don't need it to really experience the rest of the MCU. But so I think that, you know, all I knew really about Thor at the time was what I knew of him from like Age of Ultron and the Avengers and the big group movies and everything. And I found him as a character kind of stiff in those movies, you know, like they play a little bit with like, he's a fish out of water. He's this like weirdly stilted Shakespearean, like God who thinks that everything is, I was going to say like of biblical proportions, or, you know, the stakes are, he walks around with all this gravitas, when the situation doesn't call for it. Mm-hmm. But I just thought it was really smart to evolve the character in this way. And I think we can get into it more, but I do think that there is like, you can kind of see him changing a little, as even just if you just watch the Avengers and you watch Age of Ultron and stuff, you can see like Tony Stark rubbing off on him and like the kind of humor of those movies rubbing off on him and the absurdity of their position as superheroes on Earth is very present. That sense of humor is in those couple movies as well. And so I think it makes total sense to me that Thor would start to see himself with a little bit less, just take himself a little less seriously. And there's still enough, I think, in this movie to keep it mostly, you know, feeling all of a piece and that like things matter that happen, right? Mm-hmm. A couple people don't make it out of this movie. And so I think there's, you know, there are some stakes, but it certainly isn't Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
You're right.
Yeah.
Like when you stand it next to that movie, you're just like, oh God. That's a great movie. It's very, very, very different than right. This one.
Yeah. Well, and I think this movie doesn't seem like it needs to be doing other work for the MCU very much. Like it
right.
kind of it collects some people, but those people already needed collecting anyway. So there's kind of like a freedom to go off and tell this other story, which I think in my mind also helps it be okay that it's this totally different thing.
There are no Infinity Stones in this. That's what I love to see.
They mentioned them.
Almost. But, yeah. It does like connect Infinity War, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. But
everything connects.
Yeah, I want to hear Alex's thoughts, but yeah. Just because you mentioned the watching the first one on a plane, for a gig, I had to film people coming out of a new like Dolby theater and a theater, you know, like an hour outside of LA, just like a random suburb. And so I had to like wait until after every showing of Thor to catch people as they were coming out of the theater and then interview them. And it was like a 12-hour day. And so there was like five or six showings of Thor that I had to just like sit and wait through. And so I ended up basically seeing Thor like five or six times that day, like the original movie. But like from different parts of the theater, because it was like a Tuesday, so it was pretty empty. I got to go like back where they do the projector and like watch it from there. So I know a lot
about
that
movie really well.
Movie. Yeah. yeah. Okay. Alex, Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this definitely came out by the time that I had reached my Marvel fatigue. And, you know, I saw the trailer too, Brian, and I was just like, OK, yeah, there's the jokey jokes. And, you know, he's going to fight the Hulk. Look, they're going to punch each other. And so I was kind of in that mode going into this movie. But I heard it was kind of fun. It was Taika Waititi. It was like different. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to go check this out. And I had a great time. And I think I saw it by myself. Actually, I went on a whim and just like walked to the movie theater and saw it. And when the credits were rolling, I was like, I'm really happy right now. This was a great, fun experience. And I think a lot of it was just because the movie announced in that first scene, like you said, Michael, like, this is what we're doing. This is first and foremost a Taika Waititi comedy, basically. And I like that. And it doesn't really, it's that kind of comedic sensibility on a grand epic scale, but at its heart, that is what it cares about. And that's what every scene is going to come back to mostly. And so it was just a lot of fun, and it did feel, yeah, unshackled from a lot of the burden of being like a middle movie in this like endless string of Marvel storytelling, which was just like kind of a relief. It was just like, okay, like this can just be its own thing and just be fun. You know, I think my least favorite parts of it are the parts where it feels like it is doing mandatory business, you know, where it's like, we got to go see Dr. Strange. We got to go over here and like wrap up Anthony Hopkins in this like CG Norway cliff. And, you know, it just like, it's like, this doesn't feel like necessarily it would be a part of a standalone movie of Thor Ragnarok, but it like must be here as mandatory pieces on the board to like put into place. Besides that stuff, it is like blissfully free of a lot of that, and I think just the aesthetic of it, you know, the colorfulness, the poppy, just like 80s retro vibes of the sets, and you know, it's very refreshing because it's also and this is just an overall kind of modern American blockbuster vibe of just like that kind of, there's a lot of people talking about it on Twitter, just like a gray washed outness to just like CGI and action scenes and just the color palette being very just eh. And this movie is just so, it's just like a beautiful like rainbow popsicle that's just very like just fun to look at, you know, literally Rainbow Road, literally all the spaceships are super colorful and the sets are super colorful and it's just fun to look at, and it feels right for the tone. So yeah, just overall just really enjoy taking in this movie in a way that I think a lot of the other middle connective tissue Marvel movies feel more like a chore to me, and just like, this is necessary for the gigantic vision. This feels in and of itself just to be a great thing that I want to watch.
I was thinking about, you know, the Alex law of bounciness while I was watching this. And I was like, I have to imagine for you, like the bouncy issue comes from when a movie shouldn't be. Do you know what I mean? Like this movie feels it's just
I have no problem with this movie being bouncy because it's a bouncy movie. And I think that's where the Marvel thing is. It can be strange for me when people are like, you know, this feels so wrong that this is too like silly. Cause it's like, even the serious Marvel movies, like always go to like too silly a place. Like the tone never feels like it lands in a place where I get like super invested in. I mean, Endgame did this for me, I think, uniquely. But a lot of the Marvel films, like the Captain America films that I think are regarded as like, these are the really good ones because they're really like dark and serious. They still, you know, it's about Bucky and it's like the action still gets really obscenely huge and like crazy. I think there's like there's a mix of elements that never coheres for me where I can like feel totally invested. And this worked for me of just like, nothing is serious. It's a comedy. It's fun. So the bouncy colorfulness is all of a piece and it's all flowing together. Like that's what I really appreciate about this movie. And it's not telling me to feel deep, serious emotions while also showing me like completely like almost ungrokkable levels of like bouncy action. But like, this is deadly serious. Like this is real. This movie works for me for all those reasons. And I really enjoyed rewatching it.
Well, I think to your point, the story world is really important here, where so many other Marvel movies are literally on Earth, right? They're trying to stay grounded on Earth in our universe on Midgard, I guess. But like the gravity of Earth, the literal physical gravity of Earth, American cities, like, you know, or international cities and buildings and grass and trees. And like the Avengers are running around in Sokovia, which is apparently a country here on Earth. And like they're in, you know, or Wakanda or whatever. But it's still like we are here on Earth. And there is a brief detour where they go to Earth for this movie. They mostly spend it on that cliff in ice in Norway. The brief moment they're on Earth and or they're in Doctor Strange's house real quick. But like overwhelmingly, the story world here is that trash planet. I don't remember what it's called, but Jeff Goldblum's trash planet. Asgard. Yeah. And so like, you know, I feel like that already is like, again, it reminds me of Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's like, we're a space movie. We're in space. We're on spaceships. Mm-hmm. We're like on alien planets. We're in alien houses or arenas or castles or whatever it is. And I think that that's just, it helps us get on board with like, I don't need this to look real. Look, here's a giant wolf and a man that's a pile of rocks. Sure.
Right.
I don't need that to look like anything in particular. It can look like whatever it wants to look like.
Right.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated streaming service showing exceptional films from around the globe. Every day, Mubi premieres a new film. From iconic directors to emerging auteurs, there's always something new to discover. With Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected. It's like your own personal film festival, streaming anytime, anywhere. And this summer, Mubi's acclaimed audio documentary series, Mubi Podcast, returns for its second season. This time, the focus is on movie theaters, because in a time when too many cinemas are shutting down, Mubi thinks it's time to lift them up. Paddled only in theaters, the new season will tell surprising stories of individual movie theaters that had a huge impact on film history, and in some cases, history in general. Listen to the latest season of the Mubi Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And right now, you can try Mubi for free for 30 days at Mubi.com/beyondthescreenplay. That's Mubi.com/beyondthescreenplay for a whole month of great cinema for free. All right, back to the show.
So, yeah, I think that that is all these things that we're saying, I think, clearly sets this movie apart and resets expectations. I can understand how that can be jarring. Like that's either a good thing or a bad thing, depending on where you're coming from. But I think to the movie's credit, as I think you said, Trisha, maybe it was Brian, the opening tells you immediately what it is and sets the tone. But the movie does kind of do some housekeeping where it's like previous important subplot characters for Thor, like the Warriors 3, Senna Martian pointed this out on Patreon. Like, Thor had a bunch of buddies that, like, were with him on previous journeys. Their character development wasn't great, and they're kind of just kind of swept away in this one. One just isn't in this movie at all, and the other two, like, get killed immediately by Hela, and it's like, thanks for showing up for today. And I think that kind of ties into, you know, so Hela, I think I want to talk about her as an antagonist and even just like the character arc of Thor in this movie and how those things are related. But like the most exciting part of this movie to me was Cate Blanchett is going to walk around and look cool and say cool things and kill people.
And throw lots of knives and swords.
Yes.
An infinite number, you might think.
Yes.
It's like Legolas's like infinite arrows. Right. She always has more knives to throw that just come out of her.
She's going to show us every time the way her horns go. But then they can't afford to do it again, so they just do a shadow.
Why would her power be knives? Like your knife power, your dagger power? I mean, I don't hate it, but it is. Sure.
And the behind the scenes, they said that she was born with a special gift to create weapons that she wanted. So that's how she was born. Cool.
Okay.
Born this way.
I just imagine baby Hela like throwing knives.
Shooting knives. Yeah.
Like Jack and like incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, she has this really cool entrance. It's interesting that it's like, this is the sibling you didn't know you had, dark history of the family and of our people and all this stuff. And then they're separated for the rest of the movie. And she ends up just kind of running around with like Carl Urban for like the whole thing. And I think I feel like it's a waste of a Cate Blanchett, like I said in the beginning, but also for Thor to have a bit more of a character arc and for her to be more involved in the Loki Thor evolution. Because as it is, they like kind of change and people around Thor change sort of in a flat arc, but it doesn't feel super duper earned for me. And I feel like that's for me the weakest part of the movie is, while it's super entertaining, I don't feel like it's telling a super compelling cause and effect character arc story.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a really interesting, you know, we had that question about colonialism that you mentioned as a theme. And I think that those themes are the ones that kind of stand out more prominently when you think back on this movie, where you're like, oh, actually, there were these lies that were being told about our history, right? And, you know, the obvious, like, other place that we see that theme is when Thor first comes back to Asgard and Loki is there and he's pretending to be Odin right at the beginning. And they have that, you know, they're watching a play with like, Matt Damon and Sam Neill and everybody. And they're telling a lie, right? Or, like, they're creating a myth that is, we know to be a false myth about Loki's place and the history of Asgard and the history of the family, the royal family and everything. And so there's this idea that, you know, we cover things up, we cover up the parts of our history that are shameful and we rewrite them and we tell other stories about them. And that's what Hela's gripe is, right? That Odin covered her up because he found that part of his history to be shameful. His oldest daughter was like a conqueror and a bloodthirsty warrior, and he's embarrassed about that fact now. You know, Cate Blanchett's character has that line, Hela has that line, proud of what he has, ashamed of how he got it, or something like that. Mm. And that is a theme that is fascinating. And I think the movie really addresses it. And of course, like, thematically arrives at a place of like, well, burn it all down, right? Because that's what ends up happening to Asgard, all of this stolen gold and all of this like treasure that was taken, and like the empire that was built is kind of fundamentally toxic at its roots. And so the only thing to do with that empire is to like burn it down, pretty much. That has nothing to do with Thor's arc. All that is really fascinating. And it's all really interesting, too, that the MCU was kind of interested in this at the time, because there's a kind of a similar arc going on in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where a few spoilers for Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but like Star-Lord finds his father, and his father has also kind of lied about his entire history and has also built an empire by creating children all over the thing, or he literally is a planet. Both of those things, I think, are the case. but you know, it's another like toxic empire, right? And the bad guy in that case, like I said, literally is the heart of the planet, and they have to like kill the entire planet in order to kill him. And so it's really similar in some ways to this. But again, Thor's arc, not super connected to that theme, which I think is really interesting. You know, Thor is just kind of on his perpetual journey of like, should I be a king? Would I be a good one? What am I supposed to do about it? And a lot of the little episodes on this don't really point him towards anything in particular. Like, it does question, you know, the first Thor movie sets up like, you're the best king in the world, Odin. I want to be just like you. And then Odin's reputation being eroded and eroded over the course of the Thor movies, which does happen, right? Even in the first Thor movie, we find out that Odin lied about who Loki is for his own selfish purposes, essentially. So Odin not being the great king that Thor thought he was and wanted to be like is already kind of driving at that question of like, do I really want to be a king like Odin if this was the kind of king Odin was? But it isn't at the forefront of the text at all. And Thor's arc is he goes from not having the lightning eye power to having the lightning eyes and hands power by the end, because he loses his hammer so early on in this. So I feel like that is, again, loosely connected at best.
Yeah, I'm sort of two minds of this, where on one hand, I agree with everything you guys are saying. It was all beautifully said. But also it's like they could have just made the bad guy be some monster of the week, you know, or whatever, like, which I think Christian Bale might be in Love and Thunder.
Christian Bale's in Love and Thunder?
What? He's the villain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his plan is to kill all the gods. because he thinks sounds gods like are because Bale. Gods are selfish. Yeah. But like they didn't, right? So they did, as you were saying, Trisha, they did do this thematic thing where they're like, okay, we have Thor and we have his brother Loki, and we're going to wrap things up with their father. And, you know, I love that scene. I think it's beautiful. And you can see even Loki is touched when Odin says like, my sons, Loki's like, okay, he included me. And then, you know, the villain is, hey, by the way, you have a sister and she sucks. And so like, that's all great. And you know, from a top-down design thing, I think you guys are spot on that it could have been tied more closely to the character's arc and da-da-da, but it's Thor Ragnarok. I kind of don't care. And like, I'm just happy for it to be whatever it is. I do like that the characters are able to kind of change in this movie. Like you said, they don't change in sort of a plot arc way, but they change in terms of like things are different at the end of the movie, even if it's just like his hair shorter or something like that. Like they actually let there be some evolution happening.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and really quickly in the chat, one of our patrons, Michael, pointed out that there is that symbol at the end where when Thor loses an eye and he looks more like Odin, right. As we know, like he kind of is becoming Odin in a way, but obviously he's purposefully shifting away from all the spoils of war and everything. Like Asgard, he's becoming more of a leader among the people rather than like a leader in a golden castle somewhere. Right, so it's kind of like Thor is taking his place. We see that with the loss of that eye, he is kind of becoming Odin. But at the same time, the Thor that's sitting, you know, in that spaceship with just like the refugees right? The people of his, the refugees from Asgard around him looking for a new place to call home. That's a very different kind of king than the one that built an empire. So,
yeah. And then he's about to have baby Captain Kirk. Right when the and the other thing I'll say just about Hela in general, I mean, I'm a huge Cate Blanchett fan, and I think she's awesome in this movie and looks great too. But I also just like enjoy the scenes that she's in, you know, and I think that like that's the sort of the bad guy test of a movie. If you look at like Red Skull from the first Captain America, be like, I don't care at all when he's on screen. I don't, whatever, you know. But if you look at, you know, there's Killmonger and there's Joker from Dark Knight or something like that, which are like some of the best, you know, antagonists ever. I wouldn't say Hela is there, but I do just enjoy when she's on screen. I don't feel like I'm checking my watch when she shows up to be like, well, we got to get past this scene to get back. I'm like, oh no, this is going to be a really, this is also going to be a fun, entertaining scene, just in a different way than the Jeff Goldblum scenes or whatever.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It is interesting. I think the theme that does happen at the end is, you know, Odin has that line of like, Asgard isn't a place, it's a people, right? I think that's the lesson that's learned. I think it's not super clear that Thor like really needs to learn that lesson, but I guess like, you know, fight for the people, not the place is cool. But I think that is expressed more through like the Tessa Thompson character and sort of the like the surrounding characters, I think, together form that arc and have these markers of change, like you're saying, Brian, where like by the end, everyone looks different and has kind of like moved forward in a way, and together all of that feels like a shift. And it's like, no, it's not about the place, it's about the people. And then you watch Infinity War and they're all dead, so it didn't matter. Anyway.
It was a great lesson that was learned.
It's the Alien 3 problem.
Right.
Right, remember those people he saved in the last movie?
Yeah, but Brian, to your point about Hela, like I think I made a note when I was watching, just it's just so much fun to watch every scene in this movie, because even if there's exposition happening or whatever, it's being delivered with this like tight comedic timing. There's this really smooth editing happening that makes every line hit. That's supposed to be a little aside or a little joke. And it just feels so good in a way that I think, yeah, sometimes other superhero movies, not just Marvel, but just, you know, just kind of American blockbusters, it's like, here's a jokey joke moment for our blockbuster, and it just never quite hits, or it's kind of like, eh, like there's, that's that. But there's the Taika Waititi, like, just, I don't know, cleverness and smoothness. And there's like layers to a lot of the comedy, or just, you know, the exact awkwardness or strangeness of a character is like finely tuned. And I just found that to be, it just helped everything go down real smooth. You know, there was, like you said, Brian, there's no scene where I'm like, okay, here's the obligatory bad guy like discussion scene where they walk through their plan and yada yada. I never feel that in this movie. And there's plenty of other superhero blockbuster movies where it's just like, here's this scene, we gotta do it, there's nothing else happening besides the one thing, and it's just kind of exhausting. And this movie feels very alive because of all those layers of comedy and just cleverness.
Yeah, and we had a few people ask us about the comedy in this movie, Kyle and Theo, for a few, and just like, is it overused? Is it too much? And you know, Theo especially was like, I think that when the comedy happens, it's like there's so much of it that you can't take the serious moment seriously. And I think, I don't know, I think Taika, for me, he does the Jojo Rabbit thing where he's like, we are going to slow things down now, and we are going to take a serious beat. You know, Mark Mothersbaugh's score is going to stop being crazy 80s retro, and it's going to get a little more serious, and we are going to take that Odin moment, or we are going to take that moment between Thor and Loki where they sort of connect, and then we're going to get back into it, you know. But like, I feel, for me personally, it's a, as you were saying, Alex, it's a good balance where I don't feel like the movie is so crazy that I can't actually take things seriously when the movie wants me to.
Well, yeah, and I think what you get with a Taika Waititi is someone that knows how comedy works. Like, yes. comedy isn't just, here's a close-up, someone says a line, that was a joke. Like, comedy requires like construction, the way you shoot it, the way it's paced, like all these things really, really matter. You can't just like tack it on and expect it to be amazing. And so I think that is what I love about this movie, to all of your guys' points, is like, even in scenes where it's like, I don't know that like dramatically this is the most powerful thing, there's still excellent construction happening to like make each beat entertaining and feel smooth. And yeah, we got a lot of questions about like improv and the role of improv in, in comedy, in filmmaking, in all these things. I think so first of all, we were sort of talking off mic about like, what do people mean when they say improv? And I think there's a misconception there. Brian, I know you had some thoughts on that. Do you want to sort of walk us through the misconceptions maybe that people have when they hear like everything was improvised in this movie?
Right, exactly. Like, yeah, I mean, very few things out there are like entirely 100% improvised. Then there are things like Curb Your Enthusiasm, where the plot is written, but then the scenes are improvised where they tell the act. Sometimes the actors don't even know what the next part of the plot is. They just tell them, here's what you need in this scene, and here's what you need in this scene. And then they go and they improvise, right? But a lot of times what happens in movies is improvising is done in rehearsals and in early takes, and then they kind of fine tune it and find the scene that they want to use. And then that becomes what they actually film. Maybe that even gets written into a shooting script because it was, you know, it was done in rehearsals. And then they're sort of, okay, we're going to improvise this scene live. But then, of course, we're going to, in editing and in future takes and that kind of thing, we're going to then hone it, you know, down into something, which is right. It's super fun. There's this whole sequence where it's Jeff Goldblum and Rachel House, and he's like, and he does like a wave go away thing, and they don't, Loki and Valkyrie don't leave. And after they leave, he's like, I thought that was a universal sign. And he's like, there are a lot of universal signs. And he does like the I need my check thing, you know, and he's like, what does that mean? And she's like, dessert. And he's like, no, this is dessert. And he's like, you know, like he does this whole, and like, that doesn't belong in the movie. I don't like that would like screw up the pacing if it was like a fight, but it's a really fun by itself little thing to watch. There was the whole Team Thor thing that was going on during Civil War, where it was just like Thor gets a roommate and like, he's just bored and hanging out with this roommate. And he's trying to get in touch with Cap and Tony. And he's like, I guess they're having a fight over there. And it's just like these really fun improvised things that exist out there. But the movie that they made, they took those little bits and pieces and they put them, they peppered them throughout the movie. But you get a movie where every scene is a scene, right? And it's driving the plot forward. And I think of like the Judd Apatow movies, which I love those movies, but you do have scenes that are just like, we are going to watch these actors improvise with each other for 5 minutes. The movie is 2.5 hours long if you get the director's cut, and like nothing has changed at the end of the scene that from the beginning of the scene. And like that can be okay. That can be entertaining. But I think ultimately this movie does a very good job of Taika having his crazy Taika-ness and letting the actors have their like do crazy stuff or whatever. But then whatever the process was, through again rehearsals, Taika did a pass on the script after the like there is a script to this movie, and you know there's the original script. Taika did a pass on the script, and then there's whatever they improvised in the moment and how they fine tune that in rehearsals, in multiple takes, and then of course in editing, you get a movie that doesn't feel like it's wasting a bunch of time with improv. You get some fun little like, oh, he turned me into a snake, I'm like, ah, like those things where that is just Hemsworth riffing, and they had like, but they went over it a bunch of times. He turns him into a different animal and stuff. That was the take they used. So I think that's a lot of people just think improv is like they put the camera on an actor and let him go, right? And it's like, no, it's actually in some cases much harder to have a movie that has a lot of improv in it than a movie that where you just have a script that you're shooting. So it can be used poorly, but I think this is a great example of a movie where it is used very well.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah. And the thing that I love about the comedy in this movie, you know, regardless of we'll never know exactly how much of it was improv probably, but like is the interplay between the characters and when it feels like there's this sort of like effortlessness to the way the scene is moving along. So the comedy is like not just like banter back and forth that doesn't go anywhere. It's banter that's advancing the scene. And so like thinking about the scenes between Thor and the Hulk, when like the Hulk is, you know, in full Hulk form and whatever, and they're arguing and he's like, you know, I don't even like Banner. Like, we like you. I prefer you. You know, you should come back to Earth. He has a goal, right? We understand why he's talking to the Hulk in that scene. He's trying to get something from that goal. The same thing when he's talking to Tessa Thompson's character, Valkyrie, right? Like, they're kind of going back and forth, and it is really funny the way that they're arguing with each other. But it's conflict. It's funny because it's conflict, and they're using tactics to try to get what they want from that scene. The same thing with Thor and Loki. Like, when they're going back and forth, we think it's really funny most of the time because we know those two characters and we understand here are two characters in conflict who see the world in completely different ways, and they're pushing and pulling each other, and it often is really funny. But it also is like driving towards what's the next thing that's going to happen between the two of them, right? One of the funniest little recurring jokes in this is Thor throwing things at Loki, right, to make sure he's there. Okay. Yeah. It's really great, but again,
that's off, ghost.
that's my favorite line.
The knives hands person also is just the funniest. Sorry.
Korg, I love Korg. But anyway, but that recurring joke drives at the heart of the characters, right? Which is that Loki never cares enough to show up for Thor, to really show up for Thor. And then there's a payoff, exactly right. JMW Music just said in the chat, it pays off incredibly beautifully at the end when he goes and throws that thing at him and Loki catches it because he really is there. So the comedy is not about nothing. Like, there are some little moments here and there that feel like just that random humor, right? And Korg is kind of one of those. And there's other little beats where Korg's like, do you want a wooden fork? Yeah, it probably would only work with three vampires standing close together. Like, it's so great. And of course, that's not related to anything, right? So there are those moments that are really funny. But some of the best ones that are, like, are setups, their payoffs, their character moments. And the comedy helps also the serious beats land when we get to the serious beats. So when Thor and Loki are in the elevator and he's like, oh, you know, I don't know what you think of me or something, or that's not what you think of me. That's what it was. He's like, is that really what you think of me, right? Because Thor has just told him that you would do really well here, right? It's all chaos and greed and everything. He's like, oh, you thrive here. He's like, you really think so poorly of me. And he's like, I thought the world of you. Those moments, just the simple, plain-spoken, I'm going to tell you the truth instead of riffing or making a crack, those land because everything else we come to expect the crack or the joke or the fast line back, and it instead lands right there in the dramatic beat. So
I just want to also just reemphasize what Michael said earlier about just, you can feel when you're in the hands of a director who understands all the aspects of how to shoot and edit comedy, you know, where it's, once again, it's not just even what the actors are saying. It's the way one shot moves into the next and the exact moment the edit happens that makes that moment feel like a perfect comedic beat. And that's where this movie really shines in a way that a lot of other, yeah, I think Marvel movies or just blockbuster movies that are trying to be kind of also comedies fall flat for me. Is just, there's just not that precision of the direction when it comes to the comedic moments. And that just does everything. And yeah, Taika is the best when it comes to that.
And it's astounding that he's every bit as good at the action scenes as he is at those yes. comedy sequences. The climactic battle in this movie on the Rainbow Bridge is like my favorite battle in the entire MCU. It's so cool. It's just so
cool. The action
cool.
is legitimately cool. And like, even yeah. just watching the spaceships chase each other is kind of just more fun and more visually interesting than a lot of other of the more like, we previs this, you know, 2 years ago already, you know, action scenes. Like, this feels, I don't know, just like in its bounciness, it has a coherence and a visual language that is fun to watch.
Well, yeah, and it's possible they had prevised those sequences True. 2 years ago. But I think to your point, it's like, I think there are, because, yeah, the action sequences are interesting because I don't find them super compelling or like thrilling right. in a way that I often want an action sequence to be, but I do find them very entertaining. And I think this is right. kind of what you're pointing out there, Alex, is like these aren't sequences that are pretending like Thor could die at any moment. Like, we know that's not going to happen. So it's right. just designed to be like a fun character revealing, character expressing, like, sequence of visual auditory funness. So it's telling a story, it's revealing character, but it's not necessarily about the stakes of the situation, because and part of that, I think, is right. like you were saying earlier, Trisha, like the story world and the tone of this movie. Like, we know this isn't a movie where our main characters are going to die. Like, that's not a thing that's set up, and we know we're in a Marvel movie, but it's it is focusing us on the right aspects of the character and the comedy, and the action scenes are in step with all of that as well.
And the music helps too, which is like a fun kind of retro vibe, just synth track comes on. I'm just like, yeah, this is going to be a fun ride. Not like, you know, the more kind of classic, like here's like the Alan Silvestri, this is a real movie score. Like, this is like deadly serious. It's like, nah, we're like on an arcade game. Let's go have fun.
For anyone who doesn't know who Mark Mothersbaugh is, he's from Devo, the 80s band. And then he also nice. Scored a bunch of Wes Anderson's movies too.
Nice.
But just to what you were saying right there, Michael, it's not like the action is super bouncy, but there are also these really great character moments like sprinkled throughout that kind of like just when you might be starting to tune out and be like, well, now it's just a brawl on the Rainbow Bridge or whatever. There's always then like a little moment where it's like, oh, but then, you know, Carl Something Urban happens. Is going to decide to like throw down his weapon and join the refugees. And then there's these little character moments that always like, I don't know, keep me like focusing again on what's going on. And same thing with, yeah, that spaceship flight chase sequence on, what is the name of that track?
Sakaar.
Sakaar, thank you.
They say it a lot, but I know no one cares. Do, but
with the devil's anus.
It's so good. Anyway, but that, like, even with, yeah, Tessa Thompson's character, like, where she is willing to, like, jump out of the thing and sacrifice herself, and they just have these little moments that keep the action feeling like it's about something. That yeah. something could change. Not that someone's going to die, but something could significantly change for the characters. And I think that's enough in this movie to keep us watching.
And it's not a super long battle either, but no, as you said, it has a bunch of different beats and change moments where something changes. And I think that's really exciting, as opposed to movies where you just feel like you're watching people fight for like 10 minutes and the camera's moving really quickly and you're like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Exactly. Speaking of Carl Urban, I just love all the Kiwi-ness of this movie. You know, just, that's also like the just there's so many like kind of, and what's the name of the actress? Rachel House. Like, there's a sensibility that those actors bring that is just it's just refreshing and fun to see in the Marvel American blockbuster context. I want more Kiwi energy in my movies.
And Australian energy too, because you know,
Australian Caitlin, energy,
and everybody else. This was the one Sam Neill, Jeff Goldblum reunion that we needed. The only one that we needed.
Yeah. Well, also, yeah, this movie knows how to use Jeff Goldblum doing his Jeff Goldblum thing right. so well, in a way that Jurassic World Dominion just totally wasted in my eyes.
Join us on Patreon for our Jurassic right. World Dominion yeah. episode.
If you want to hear more thoughts on Jurassic World Dominion.
We have thoughts about that movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think all the Marvel films, as far as the action goes, I think it is always best when it's about character. Really, all action is best when it's about character.
Yes, absolutely.
Talked about. But I think, yeah, there can be action sequences in movies where you feel the stakes. We talked recently about Top Gun Maverick and how in those, you know, finale moments, it feels like there are stakes because you don't know what's going to happen. Like, you genuinely, the movie has set up a world in which you don't know as an audience what the outcome is going to be. And so the steps that they're taking are compelling because you're wanting to know what's going to happen and what the fate of these characters will be in an existential way. And that it's also revealing character. And I think in movies like these big blockbuster IP things, finding ways to make each scene, whether it's action or not, about the character and how the characters can change, as you're pointing out, Trisha, is for me when those sequences work super well. Like, what's it going to mean to these characters if something goes this way versus that way? And that's what I'm hanging on and wondering about. And I think that's what's cool about Endgame, is that it manages to do that a lot. But then there are these moments where I truly don't know for sure what's going to happen. And you get that best of both worlds.
Yes.
Yeah.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Cool. Well, why don't we move into lessons and what lessons we're going to take away from Thor Ragnarok. Brian, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. I just want to also say that Idris Elba has never looked cooler than in this movie.
Oh, my God.
And that's saying
like
a lot.
Like cat eyes.
So cool.
Yes, my lesson is about Led Zeppelin and the girl with the dragon tattoo and expectation. I think we've talked about this a little off mic, but I don't think I've ever actually mentioned it on the podcast. I love A Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but it did this thing that I find baffling, which is Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross and Karen O of Yeah Yeah Yeahs did this electronic, energetic cover of Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song. And when the first teaser came out, it was like, bam, bam, da, 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 the feel bad movie, bam, 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 bam of Christmas. Da, 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 and it was like, oh, man, like this movie is going to be crazy and like energetic and action packed. And then and, you know, there's a shot of her like opening the door and it looks like really bad. It's just literally her answering a door in the movie. And you could be like, oh, well, trailers are designed to put butts in seats, right? Like, so, you know, they want people to think it's a different movie. Like, okay, fair. Then you sit down to watch the movie and the opening sequence plays the song and look at these images. Here we go. And it's like, okay, I guess this is going to be like this crazy. And then it's this like slowly paced kind of mystery thriller. And that's not to say it shouldn't be. I think the movie is the movie it should be. But the way that it's set up is setting you up to be like, you're going into this like crazy fast paced thing. And that's just not what it is. And I love the movie. I love the opening sequence and I love the teaser trailer. But when you put them all together, it's like it took me a couple times to watch the movie and actually appreciate the movie for what it actually was and not for what I had spent like months being led up to expect that it was going to be. Now take Thor Ragnarok. You know, the teaser comes out. It's like 6 years later. Lo and behold, Led Zeppelin's Immigrant Song looks like it's going to be this really fun action movie. Then the movie starts and we get this energetic opening sequence set to Immigrant Song. It's everything the trailer suggested the movie was going to be. And it's telling you what the movie is going to be, as we talked about at the top of the episode. And then it all pays off in that final battle on the Rainbow Bridge where it's like, here's the song again. Here's the kind of action we told you were going to get. You're actually getting it. We are doing everything that we promised we were going to do at the top of this movie. I just feel like it's a really interesting lesson, just especially because they use the same exact song. It's a really interesting lesson about how you market your thing, the way you start a script, the way you start a movie. If you're an editor or director, you can do the coolest thing ever, but if you are not properly setting expectations for what your actual thing is, then even if your opening is awesome or whatever, it could actually hurt the rest of the movie because it could put people in the wrong headspace, you know, and mean that they're disappointed by what they actually get, where they wouldn't have been disappointed if you had more accurately set up what it was going to be. Jurassic World Dominion, right? The trailer, Dinosaurs Live Among Us, the opening 5 minutes, Dinosaurs Live Among Us, the actual movie basically has nothing to do with it. It has nothing to do with
Locus.
It at all. Yeah, Locus, and we're on one very specific place with only 10 characters.
Yeah.
That's so interesting that you felt like that was a misleading vibe, you know, that trailer and that song. Cause yeah, for some reason I never connected it as being like, this will literally be a fast paced.
Sure.
Like movie that like goes fast and hard.
And that's not going to happen to everyone, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, but I can see how that would be potentially like if you didn't know anything about the movie.
I think it's a fair point. And to briefly defend Dragon Tattoo, I feel like it's the opening for like the trilogy And like, mm-hmm. if you could watch all three of the movies back to back to back, it would feel like the right opening. But
right, it has images from all three like stories and
never
stuff.
Be
yeah,
able to
right.
do that.
It was supposed to get maybe more intense.
Yep,
shed a tear. But yeah, that's expectations within your movie and outside of your movie are always very important to consider, for sure. Cool, Alex. What's your lesson?
So my lesson goes back to the comedy again, and just the power of a good gag. You know, I think just. There's so many scenes that are having to do an exposition dump, but I don't care because I'm enjoying the gag of that scene. So I was thinking about when Thor first wakes up on the trash planet and he's in like the Tomorrowland ride, like chair and is like going through the kind of like presentation, you know, it's like,
there's pure imagination from Willy Wonka.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's the pure exposition happening of just like, we are now going to tell you these important facts about the place you are and what's going to happen next. But I'm so enjoying the satire of the form the exposition is coming in, and it's perfect satire with the perfect tone of voice, the perfect music, as you said, the perfect, like the speaker just kind of wobbled in like a perfect way. So it's doing a gag 100% while it's also delivering information. Like we mentioned the gag of throwing things at Loki. So even though I don't really care that much what they're talking about in this scene, I'm enjoying the perfect timing of the rock throws and how it's interplaying with their conversation. And, you know, just even Kate Blanchett's character, like walking through the kind of like storeroom of objects like below, you know, whatever, like I'm supposed to know probably what most of the objects are and the Tesseract, whatever. But I just, yeah, every moment there's a second thing happening, the way she's commenting on them are like, that one's impressive, Nat, but not that one. There's like a gag vibe at all times that makes all the information go down easy and gives me a layer of entertainment, even if I don't care about this specific necessary plot thing. So yeah, just a great example of how to use gags throughout the movie to just provide pure entertainment on another level on top of the necessary plot information being conveyed.
Yeah. Yeah. Multiple things at once. Always good. And if they can be funny and entertaining, even better. Yeah.
Yes.
Trisha.
Well, my lesson is a little related to the comedy aspect as well. But I was thinking once again about why Marvel characters end up being so beloved and they seem so human and relatable and like, you know, whereas DC characters often feel not that. And I talked a little bit about this when, I think it was on our Civil War podcast, or it was our Endgame and Infinity War podcast, but it was basically like Marvel is able to find the humanity of those characters. And I think this movie is a really good example of where that humanity comes in, and it's in the characters' flaws. Like, these characters are allowed to look ridiculous. They're allowed to make bad decisions. They are allowed to make mistakes and fall down. And like, they do that a lot in this movie. All of them do. Like, Thor makes a lot of miscalculations and bad choices. And a lot of that is comedy comes in, right? Like, even just something as simple as he throws the ball against the window and it comes back and whacks him in the head, right? Like,
moment is so good.
It's awesome. But again, it's just like, Thor looks ridiculous. He's a little silly. He made a miscalculation. He made a bad decision just in that little moment, right? And then he pops up and tries to act like it's not a big deal. Same thing even with like, just at the beginning where he's like going to grab the hammer, right? And he's like, that's what heroes do. And then he has to wait. He's like, oh, sorry, I didn't time that right. I'm sorry. Hang on. Mm-hmm. That's what heroes do. You know, again, those are moments that are being played for comedy, but they're also humanizing the characters. Like, if he had said, that's what heroes do, and the hammer flew in right there and he looked cool and just did cool things only, we wouldn't like him as much if he were just cool. Like, he has to be flawed and a little silly. I think the peak example of this in this movie is Valkyrie, right? She's like kind of messy and drunk all the time and like makes a lot of mistakes and miscalculations. And she is still like a cool character, but she's flawed. And that's, again, it's where comedy meets humanity. And so I can't imagine some of the stuff that happens to all the characters in this movie. Like the Hulk jumps out of the spaceship because he's going to go fight on the Rainbow mm-hmm. Bridge, and he doesn't transform in time and he just falls and like rolls on the bridge, right? Like that's bad timing. It's miscalculation. It's a flaw. It's a problem. It's a mistake. And it makes Hulk look ridiculous for a few seconds in this case. Can you imagine that? Like any DC hero, that happening, that exact thing happening to them? Mm. Like, is that ever going to happen to Batman? Ever? Like, I don't think so. And I don't know. Marvel is, and obviously they're wildly different kinds of superheroes and superhero movies. But I just feel like Marvel is so good at knowing when to make a really, really, really cool superhero character look silly or make a mistake on screen. And we just love them that much more. We love them in their mistakes because we see ourselves when they're making silly mistakes.
On the topic of making action heroes super beloved, I'm on a campaign to make us talk about RRR because I think that movie takes another approach to making you just super, super, super love the main action heroes, which is not necessarily them like falling flat and looking silly during action scenes, but like deep, earnest, like brotherly love. And I think there's something about just like, yeah, letting us get access to just like an unabashed humanity mm-hmm. of a character. They don't always have the steely, cool right. facade on, but like there's something almost embarrassingly earnest and like sweet about this person. Now I'm in love with you. Now you're not just a symbol. You're like a full-fledged person that I can like, I want to hang out with.
There's a video essay about the concept of bathos, which is leading up to a big moment and then sort of throwing it away for a comic effect, or at least that's how it's described in the video. Specifically talking about Last Jedi and how like a lot of the big moments in that movie are sort of undercut by then at the end of the scene being like, anyway, just kidding. Or like, here's a joke now or whatever. And it's interesting because all the moments you're talking about, Trisha, I was noticing this during the movie, it's sort of bathos, but in the middle of the sequence. So it's like, because that's what here hit with the ball. And then he picks it up. He's like, because that's what heroes do. And then he jumps out of the window and you get this really cool slide down the building. Or like Hulk does get his big moment. It's just interrupted with like a little joke where he doesn't get his big, he doesn't get his like entrance the way he wants it, but he does then get the moment. Right. So I think like that's where that kind of concept is used really well, where it's like, we are going to throw a little joke in here, but you are also going to get the thing that you were hoping for.
Yes. That's a really good point.
Yeah. I think that's a really good observation. Cause I think there have been things in DC movies or other superhero movies where, you know, it is that the bathos that you're describing, the wrong way to do it, Brian, where it's like build up, slip and fall, stand up. Well, that didn't go so well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wait for applause and then move on. Like that doesn't work either. And I think what's interesting, you know, we talked about the Batman recently, and then I think we've all kind of rewatched it. I've rewatched it and appreciated it a lot more a second time. But I feel like the Batman, while not being humorous, does give like Bruce Wayne, give Batman these moments of failure where he is, it is humanizing him and allowing us to see some of these flaws. And I think that's just such a critical thing that you're bringing up here, Trisha, of like, we're aligned with our goals, but they have these flaws that are like self obstacles, and overcoming those makes it ultimately more impactful when you see Thor arrive with his hammer and glowing with all this lightning. And I guess he doesn't have a hammer.
Or
he's like just made lightning. Of lightning now.
Right. Yeah. He's just made of lightning and like Tessa Thompson walking out of the fireworks ship
cool.
in the coolest slow-mo shot ever. Like all that is earned because we know what they want. We've seen their flaws and we've been with them as they overcome those flaws. Yeah, so my lesson was going to be about comedy also, and I feel like we basically have now covered all the things that I was going to say, but I think to sum up, I think this movie, what I'm taking away from this movie and this conversation is how a reminder of how rich a toolbox comedy can be, and that it is harder than people think, but it is also this amazing tool that gives you access to all the most important parts of telling a story and getting people emotionally involved and setting a tone and giving you dynamics and all those things. I want to watch it again now, and I'm excited for Love and Thunder to see how this continues.
So excited.
I've only seen the first teaser, so I don't know anything, and I'm excited about it. Apparently Christian Bale's in it, though, which is exciting.
He's in the full trailer, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Okay, so we're going to go into what we've been watching recently. As a reminder, the next episode will be about Get Out, which I'm very excited about. Mm-hmm. Okay, Alex, what have you been watching recently?
So Brian and I recently went to the Alamo Drafthouse to see, to eat some food and then watch Crimes of the Future, the new David Cronenberg movie. It was definitely like, yeah, not the most appetizing movie to eat food during. David Cronenberg, this is definitely his return to just pure body horror imagery in the style of like Videodrome or Existence. Yeah, so it was very, it was very Cronenberg. It had this like very, very interesting like palette to it, where it's like it felt very small and kind of indie in a lot of ways, and even the kind of the prosthetics and the effects felt kind of retro. But also, yeah, just spun this very strange mood of this like future where it's just like, you know, everything's gotten so extreme, which feels kind of like feels thematically resonant with just like the internet and just kind of a detachment that people feel. So interesting movie. Not sure how I feel about it, but I'm going to process all those feelings very soon on the Dismembering Horror podcast, which is co-hosted by our friend Ryan McDuffie. So I'm going to check it out again. And I will be breaking it down more over there. All the Cronenberg body horror weirdness. So yeah, Crimes of the Future is what I've seen lately.
If you can stomach it. It's very much a movie where like you realize it's not, this shocking stuff is not just there to shock you. It's all thematically connected. And,
right.
You know, like Alex and I were talking about, like every scene, every like decision in that movie is like speaking to this kind of theme that the movie is, you know, working with basically. And like that for me made me able to like connect to it and not just be like, well, we're doing another shocking, crazy thing again. I was like, oh no, I understand why we're doing this.
I was actually like pleasantly surprised by the thematic coherence and how the movie was focused. It wasn't just look at all the gooey stuff we can do. It was, this is about something. So yeah, really interesting movie.
Also doesn't take itself too seriously, which is refreshing.
Yes. Yes. It knows how weird it is. And it's almost satirical in its vision of the future. Yeah.
Nice.
Not going to speak for Michael, but I'm going to go ahead and not check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you would. I don't think either of you would enjoy it a whole lot.
Trisha, on Tuesday, do you want to not go to that movie together and just do something else?
Thank you for asking me. I would love to not go to that movie on Tuesday.
Just go sit outside the theater.
Just not see it. Awesome. Okay. Well, so then, Brian, what have you been watching recently?
I watched Suspicion, the Apple TV Plus series, which the plot of it is Uma Thurman plays this media mogul whose son is kidnapped. And then there are five suspects who are rounded up who they're like, we had nothing to do with this. So they end up teaming up together to kind of find out, like, why are we being targeted? What's really going on here? And that kind of thing. And it's, I don't know if it's the kind of thing I would normally watch, but my dear, dear friend, Kunal Nair, is the first credited of in the opening credits and everything. And he's one of the five suspects. And it's great. He gets to play some dramatic roles, and you know, he's taking on a lot of new work right now. And I drove him to his first audition in LA back in 2006, picked him up at the airport and took him to the audition. And then we went and drove around singing to Guns N' Roses. And, then I took him back to the airport a few hours later. It's great. You know, I'm proud as a friend, but also it's just, it's an entertaining series that I enjoyed. It's kind of a whodunit, you know, sort of thriller thing. And there's like a really cool midpoint switch that happens that throws things into a whole new direction. If you're down for that kind of, it's like not disposable network kind of thing. It's also not prestige, like, you know, Mare of Easttown or something like that. It's like, so it fits nicely in the middle where it's very entertaining and I think worth checking out.
Awesome.
Nice.
Cool. Very cool. Okay. Trisha, what have you been watching?
Yeah, so I finally decided to watch a show that people have been recommending to me for a while. So I'm watching Sense8. I know. I went back and I was like, I should finally watch this show, the Wachowskis show that they made on Netflix. And what a show it is. I'm really enjoying it. It's, you know, if you don't know, it's about psychics who that's like they have a powerful eight people who have a powerful connection with each other, and they're all around the world, and they're all psychically connected to each other. And it's just a show about vibes, really.
that's a great way to put it. It's like,
just a show about vibes and editing, basically. Yeah.
And super queer. Super queer vibes and editing.
It's also really sexy and really queer. And like, I love all
mind orgies.
Right. It's June, so it's Pride Month. So I'm like, I'm just going to watch a bunch of psychic orgies. It's great. It's awesome. Like, that's what I want from this show. Like, I don't know. Yeah. If you're going to have a show about eight people around the world that are psychically, like, aligned, like, then why not? And like, I'm into season two now, so I haven't quite finished all of it, but I really like it. And there's some really interesting, like, some of the stuff in it I would say is like not predictable, but I'm just like, I've seen this kind of a plot before, or like I've seen this character archetype before, and sometimes in a way that's really helpful where it's like easy to get a grip on what's going on. But then there are other moments where I'm like, I genuinely have never seen a character like this before, or a relationship like this that's portrayed in quite this way. And I just think there's like a lot of beauty in there. And like, I don't have any idea. Like, I didn't know that they had made this or that how they had made this. But if you like the Wachowskis, you'll like it. I promise. It's great.
Awesome. Cool. Okay.
What have you been watching, Michael?
So to keep on theme, I watched Moon Knight. I'm a little bit late to the party, but Moon Knight, Disney Plus show. And so a friend who's into the comics and into the MCU recommended to me, like, don't research anything about it. Don't look anything up. Just watch it. Like, just go in as cold as you can. I was like, okay. And I think that was good advice. And so I would give that same advice to people that haven't seen it. So I'm not going to talk about what it's about even really. But the way that Thor Ragnarok kind of carves out its little corner of the MCU to play in, I think Moon Knight carves out a cool little space for itself. It's a different space, but it feels distinct in the MCU. And there's some cool filmmaking. Oscar Isaac gets to show off, and he's super great. It's super fun to watch him. The supporting cast is really fun. Like, Ethan Hawke is good. Mae Callum, I don't know how to say her last name. I'm butchering it, but she's really good. I didn't know who she was, but she's, you know, a pretty critical part. So anyway, the cast is cool. The filmmaking is cool. The concepts and ideas are pretty cool. I saw that there was discourse about it on Twitter, and I tended to look away. And so I can't remember if people were like, oh, this is really great, or oh, this really sucks. But I really liked it. I would highly recommend it to you guys if you haven't seen it. Alex, I think if you were going to watch an MCU show, I would recommend.
This is the one?
I agree with that.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
no promises.
Oscar Isaac's my guy. So
yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah, I think
that helps. Yeah.
Like, to stick with Michael's, you know, not wanting to say too much, I will just say that, like, as opposed to what a movie can do, the series in the middle takes a few episodes to just be like, we're just going to spend some time with character and like really do character work. So actually my favorite part of the series is like the middle, where they're like, we're not even that worried about like the superhero stuff going on right now. We are just going to like really spend time with these characters and get to know them. So like that I thought was really lovely.
Yeah, no, it's very competently done. It's still an MCU show, but I feel like it's a good entry point for people that may have an allergy to some of those things. I think this is I really enjoyed it.
Listen, I'm going to be on some airplanes and trains soon traveling. So
hey.
There you go.
I'm going to download this. I'm going to watch
Excellent.
It.
Nice.
Oscar Isaac. Yeah. Here I come.
Lots of Oscar Isaac. Okay, cool. Well, this has been our conversation on Thor Ragnarok. Thank you, as always, to the patrons for making the show possible. Thank you guys for suggesting topics and things to pay attention to. That's always finding it helpful and like frames the viewing experience, and I think gives us some cool jumping off points. So if you want to suggest some topics for Get Out, head over to the Beyond the Screenplay Patreon. That's going to be a fun conversation. There's so many, oh my God, so many things to talk about.
So much to talk about. Man.
Thank you to our producer, Vince Major. Thank you to our editors, Caleb Berg, Graham Harther, and Eric Schneider. I'm Michael Tucker, and I've been joined today by Trisha Rand, Brian Bittner, and Alex Cayotos. All of our Twitter handles are in the show notes. Send us a tweet and say hi, and we will see you in the next episode with our discussion of Get Out.
Bye, everybody.
Sun's getting real low.
Bye.